This week on The Droids, we're talking about episode 10, One Way Out. What an episode of Andor. Oh, I could watch it 1,000 times over again. We're going to talk all about it this week on The Droids.
Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for. These are the droids.
I'm the one.
There's always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, alongside Ryan, Chris, and Sam, all four of us here once again, episode 201. Not going to wax poetic this time about everything we've done on this podcast, just getting right in to episode 10. But before we do that, reminder, you have a chance for that R2-D2. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and you will be entered in for a chance to win the R2-D2, valued at over $200, shipped to you at no cost to you. Go and give us that review, and you will have a chance to earn that free R2-D2 to you. That would be it. So,
also, for people who listened to the last episode, as you know, we're recording this live at the Hollywood Bowl. Everybody's keeping it down for the recording, but, I mean, let's give it up for John Williams and the Los Angeles Philharmonic for doing our intermission.
An incredible get. Obviously,
everybody's doing the silent cheer that you used to do in elementary school.
Exactly.
We raise the roof silently, and what a performance.
It's just
and
a shame. Listening. Due to they're licensing, great. We can't play the actual performance.
Right, but, we don't want to get sued, but it was so great for them. They came out, and, you know...
This is why you want to buy tickets to the live show, people. Yeah. If you're listening at home and you're thinking, man, I missed the JW.
Yeah.
Well, next time.
You know. John Williams was so great to fill in. We originally had Tar from the movie Tar to conduct.
Then
we found out she's fictional and John Williams came in.
Ryan, we all told you at the start, but we let you go down that path.
Well, yeah, we found out also that Tar, that she's a little problematic. That's for all the Tar heads out there.
Tarcast. Save it for the Tarcast. The Tar Wars. Tar Wars.
You know, you could do a Tarcast about Tar, who's also in Interstellar, right? Tar is the robot. So there's a couple of Tar characters.
Well, Tars.
Sorry.
There you
voiced by Bill Irwin, an actor I love, and a character that is insufferable.
There you go. That's two episodes already down in the can. Way to go.
Tars.
And then you go to La Brea Tar Pits, and then that's it.
Leave it up to Christopher Nolan to make a box be his comedic relief.
Well, here we
but
go
it protects
again.
You from probably protects you from cats though.
All right, let's dive into this episode of Andor because it's one of the purest forms of storytelling and one of the most fulfilling episodes of any TV show I've watched over the last decade, and plus one of the best moments of Star Wars, one of the best pieces of Star Wars we've had in decades. Whoa. We love The Last Jedi, but this show has been, I'm putting it all out there. I put this all out
the
there
purest
as one of the
form
best
of
things.
Storytelling. I also think it was great, but whoa, baby.
I'm gonna go for the mountaintop on this one.
I just want to remind everybody that just go easy on Mike. He said he was not going to wax poetic this time. So.
Well, I said not about the show, not about our podcast. I would about Andor,
right?
But, you know, the podcast.
I get
all right,
it.
So we the dive podcast? Back in.
Wax away. Wax away, Mike. Wax
I'll
anything
wax.
You
we
like.
Call you Brazilian Mike. Wax away.
That's so on character for me. You really nailed it. I think this one just dives right back into Narkeena 5, picked up moments after where we left off in episode 9 with the doctor leaving with Ulaf on. You know, these little touches of to remind you you're in Star Wars is the floating like stretcher. Just that seems pretty much on point because we've seen that in Star Wars at other times as well. But there's like these things where we know we're in the world of Star Wars throughout all of this, but then you also have reminders where it's like, oh, that's clearly Star Wars. Because there are at times where you could be like, I could be watching any sci-fi show.
You know where one of those like maglev stretchers would have come in handy? Loading up all that gold a few episodes ago.
Exactly.
You're right, man.
I was going to say, as the production calls those kind of effects, a pain in the ass.
Yeah. We'll fix it in post, they say.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of the production, we didn't give enough credit in the last episode. We haven't given enough credit throughout. We've talked about it before, but Luke Hull, the production designer in this.
Just beautiful.
Look at the prison. Look at what we've seen throughout this. And that entire set. They built that whole set for that floor. And I love that there's so much of it where it is just, 60 people working on tables and you can shoot all of that in one place.
Yeah.
And it looks 49 really great
people.
And,
as opposed, just gorgeous. Nice,
yeah.
As opposed to just like a few white boxes and then just the volume.
Just the walls.
Exactly.
Well, and it allowed them to, you know, obviously reuse that for other floors. But when we have this moment of actual escape and they first take down the guard, that's all very physical and can be shot, obviously, in reality versus them having to, like, put in some CG to coverage things in the background. Like, I just think that all looked great.
Now, what I thought was, I mean, we'll jump right in. What I thought was so great about that whole sequence where they're like, we're going now, you know, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
Is that I don't like this for the internal world, but for the storytelling is that they were taking casualties.
Yeah.
This wasn't like a very tidy like overthrow at all.
Well, which is why Cassian had to do so much work convincing Kino. Like Kino's saying, like, what did we just witness? He's like, we witnessed power, and he's like, power, what does he say? Power doesn't get nervous, or power doesn't have fear, or whatever it is. And he's calling it out as like, this is their best opportunity, because everyone in the prison is gonna find out what happened, where they fried everybody. And then they're also going to have a new man on the floor where they've been plotting this out and watching for the moment. And so he's like, this is where we have to capitalize.
Right.
Yeah, this is like, we talked last episode, Mike, you brought it up about like recontextualization. It's like, once again, you know, you look back at how much, you know, the whole table really supported Ulof, and Andor in particular would like jump in to help him complete his work and everything. But how quickly... And I mean, this is an kind of amazing character beat for Andor, for Diego Luna to play, which is like, he's gone, and instantly he's like, it's tonight, this is the moment. That body out the door means a new person coming in tomorrow. You know, and like that, I mean, it's icy and it's chilling, but it's also, you're meant to hold both emotions. You're meant to feel the weight of Ulof's death, but you're also meant to be exhilarated and excited, because we've spent four episodes in this prison, or three episodes, and we're in our fourth episode, and we want to get out with him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've been written into a corner where I personally have no, like, I had no idea how they could possibly escape. And I kind of love the idea that there wasn't a scene where it's like, right, here's what we'll do. And like I feel like that's way too easy of a way to kind of just cut through the dread. And I think like having that stake of the unknown, and then when allows us to kind of like piece it together in real time, and you're like, and then you can predict the ending. But it makes it that much more like just enriched and just like engaging than I've seen a long time from not only Star Wars, just like from TV in general. It's just, it's so satisfying to let your mind put it together.
100%. Like Ryan, I was out for several episodes. I was lost on croissant looking for my carcass. Ryan, you said, I'm just proving that I listen.
The pastry plant.
Me too.
But Ryan, you brought up during the heist that like, the previous arc with the heist of the payroll, you highlighted that it's like, it's not about the heist, right? Like all the episodes leading up to it were like the important stuff, the character beats. And like, I think like Chris, that not having the like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Like the escape, obviously it's pretty much a full episode, you know, devoted to it, but that's not like the important part of this whole, like the whole thing was the character arc for Kino and for Andor and how they change. And that's why we spent four episodes. Cause they very easily could have been like, again, the cheap way this show does it is he gets captured at the end of one episode, and by the end of the following episode, he's escaped, and the whole thing that was the prison
arc,
vent
and he gets out. Yeah,
and it's like, no, they actually, it's so far it's been three episode arcs, and this was four episodes, right? So we really feel the confinement right there with Andor. It's like he's been stopped, and so have we've been stuck in this prison while bad things are happening to the other people we care about, and it just and they don't explain, they don't give you the cheap like great, we'll show you how to do it and then we'll show you where it goes off the rails. It's like, you were excited because you were witnessing it for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, hey, is this 2007 Fox primetime? Because we got ourselves a prison break.
I didn't realize that Cassian had all those tattoos on his back.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that he does. That's how he has the whole map.
He had the whole map of the thing on there.
I wish it was 2007.
Yeah, you're settling in. You're watching Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Also,
we should talk about Andy Serkis. This is no surprise. He's a tremendous actor, but I cannot think of an actor who's better at playing simultaneously incredibly imposing and like painfully vulnerable.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He has these mm-hmm. eyes that are just like unbelievable, which obviously like explains why he's so great for like mocap stuff. I understand that they animate the eyes, but it's just like,
yeah,
he's so emotive without seemingly without doing much. Obviously,
Ryan,
doing
that's CG, Ryan.
Yeah.
Right.
They use CG.
But the level with which he's able to be very intimidating and extremely vulnerable is mm-hmm. so impressive. It's kind of his like magic. It's his magic wand a little bit.
I want to see him in more things because of
it's
that.
Also, like,
do you mean more things as a physical actor versus
as himself? Yeah,
yeah, I mean, exactly. I obviously love the mocap work he does, but it's also I love him as a live action actor.
Yeah,
yeah.
And in Lord of the Rings, it was called Smeeg G. Sam.
Gross.
Smeeg G. I.
Oh boy.
Gross.
What?
It's 201. It's down. You got to go down after a certain point. Sorry.
You got to take it down. I mean, there's not much that, you know, you can say that, oh, in the Planet of the Apes series that he wasn't phenomenal. He was phenomenal in those movies. But you almost wonder, like, there's no way it could have been a physical representation of him. But I just think that he would have gotten a lot more attention if it was actually his face, meaning from awards and conversations. Like, people just don't give him the credit that he deserves for those performances. And in this, I hope he does. I mentioned in the last episode, I hope he gets some nominations. I hope he wins some awards for what he did within this. But there's the back and forth between the two of them where, you know, Cassian says, what is it? I'd rather die trying to escape than give them what they want. And then that is what's brought back later when Kino has been so inspired by Cassian. You know, it's really interesting to see what Cassian has kind of become in this series. A lot of the time, he's not given the best dialogue. I mean, he has great dialogue, but he's not given the speech that Kino has. He's not given the speech that Luthen has at the end of this episode. He's the one empowering others to be leaders. And I don't think he knew that about himself. We didn't know that about him. And we're watching him become this guy who can feed rebellion by supporting others rather than just being the one who's giving the speech, if that makes sense.
Mike, it makes complete sense. It feels like there's, you know, I mean, writers, you know, often talk about, you know, when they, and I don't know if I have not watched any of the or read any of the interviews with Tony Gilroy. I know you guys mentioned a few, so I'm speaking broadly, right? That I know a lot of writers, you know, that it's like you have to start somewhere, right? And you have to start with, you know, a few core ideas. And it feels to me like one of the core ideas with Andor came from, you know, what they were doing with Rogue One. I guess I'm actually borrowing from The Last Jedi, but the idea of like the spark that will light the fuse, right? The spark mm-hmm. that will light the rebellion. And that kind of comes up of like rebellions are built on hope. There's these, it's, you know, Rogue One was entirely built around an ensemble of unknown Star Wars characters, not unknown actors, unknown Star Wars characters, right? Who played this huge support role. And it seems like that was an exciting idea. And that, you know, Tony Gilroy has in writing the show really been like, he always has to be unknown. He always has to be invisible. He can never be Luke or Han.
Yeah.
Right. Because those guys are they're the celebrities of the rebellion. They're the celebrities of the revolution, right? But the people who really make it work and who pave the way often are forgotten in history because they have to be. And so it's like, that feels like what you're talking about, Mike, that he's always the person right next to the action feels very intentional to me.
Yeah.
Like that it's like, he's not the guy who's going to be known for, you know, stealing the payroll. He's not the guy who's going to be known for the prison break, even though he was the spark. And I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
It's he's kind of like, he's like becoming, and I mean, we could relate this back to Last Jedi with kind of how the children at the end handle Luke's like tail. Like he's becoming the the Fable. Like, he's becoming
Has a tail?
Yes, remember? Remember, he has that low cat tail he installs. It's robotic, but it's cool.
Installs. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. But he's becoming, like, the legend. And, like, whether people know his name is Andor or not, like, it's becoming this tale. And, like, these people that survive this prison thing will spread this message.
Well, and it makes it special for us as the audience because we know it. And there's this notion that it's, like, in the world of Star Wars, he's going to be unknown and forgotten and you know, not forgotten, but he's going to be a nameless, you know, hero of the rebellion.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
That's ultimately lost on Scarif. Right. But it's like, to us, it's like, well, we're privileged to have known him almost of a, you know, thing.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Well, there's more from Kino where even before we get to the big speech, he's building up, talking to everyone, saying, look, I'm assuming I'm dead and we need to figure out what we're doing here. And they kind of have these moments before they even start the action where it's already like this forceful performance, but it's all building up to what he's going to do at the end of the episode. And so I think that's just kind of like where we then set everything off, because then we get into, and as we talked about earlier in the episode, we don't know what's going to happen. But I love something, I don't know if all of you thought about this, and I mean, it is like we talked so much about the boots when we first got into Narkeena 5. And it just, to me, sort of in retrospect, it's not a red herring, but it feels like a red herring because I'm like, oh, somebody's going to get the boots. One of the prisoners is going to wear the boots. It's going to be Cassian. He's going to get the boots and that'll be the difference. But no, they just all get on the table and short out the floor, which is brilliant. And then they find their way out.
Yeah. And even when they're like escaping, the boots are in front of them. I'm like, grab the boots, get them now. Just grab some boots now. Yeah.
Take them in case. What if the power goes back on? Just have them. Exactly. Just have them.
Figure something
out. What if you end up in the year 2025 and you need to get in your DeLorean? You need those boots.
Also, they just look great, you know?
Yeah, they're self-lacing. They're very cool. Yeah.
So before we get too far into the rest of like what becomes the climax of this episode, there is one scene with Mon Mothma. And it is a scene to me that I will never forget about the performance of Genevieve O'Reilly. But it's where she's meeting with Davos to try to figure out how she can hide her money so that no one knows that she's been moving things around to help the rebellion. And it's a really nice back and forth. And it feels very classic. And like the actor that they brought in for it just feels, you know, spot on for some
so
devious
smarmy.
Yeah, exactly. Scumbag and all of this. And it's a long way around. There's a lot of build up to it, a lot of discussion to get to. Let's use the traditions of our planet for him to get what he wants rather than just getting compensation and paying for it. And there is the suggestion that his son would marry her daughter. And the look on her face is so impactful, but also so subtle. Like, you see it in her eyes, you see it in her lips. She obviously completely pushes back against it, but it's like this mere suggestion. And I honestly, the body language of her throughout the entire scene really stood out to me. Because she is sitting just normally. But if you look at it, it almost looks like she's bracing herself throughout the entire conversation. Mm-hmm. She's bracing for what this evil, villainous person is going to ask of her. And I love that aspect to it.
Yeah.
Well, and he gets such a great line to end the exchange.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, she unequivocally and clearly says, like, no way, I'm not even considering it. And he gets the line, it's something to the effect of, no, that's the first time you've lied, or that's the first lie you've told since I got here. And it's just like, I mean, what, Tony Gilroy, I mean, you know, I often say with like fiction, it's like the strength of your show depends, or the strength of your story depends on the strength of the villains. And I don't know if I buy into that. That feels like a stupid thing people say about writing, but like, there are some class one villains in this show, just like the worst people ever.
You know what's also great is that every time there seems to be a quote unquote opportunity for them to take in like a character, for them to do like a legacy character in one way or another, it seems like every other show would be like, we need like a gangster, let's do like who's the dude from Solo? I forget his name.
Paul Bettany. Paul Bettany.
Yeah, like every time that there's like an opportunity, a quote unquote like opening for them to be like, we're gonna bring in a character people know and they're gonna freak out, they just don't do it. And I love that because it makes like It seems like it would be an exciting thing, but it actually just makes the world smaller.
It
so
just
instead we get
down.
To see these interesting characters that are new, and they're like new actors to the franchise and stuff. And we may never see them again. You know, Davos may not be a character, but he had this great scene.
Ryan,
and it was like cool, and he was a new character, and we weren't beholden to this idea of like, oh, you know, she needs a gangster to come in, and they called Watto or something, you know, like whatever.
Ryan. Exactly. No, it could have easily been Dryden Voss.
Dryden Voss, thank you.
You're hitting on something that I think you've just unlocked something for me, which is like, I have, I think like a lot of people, like there's sometimes a resistance to like prequels. It's like, oh my God, or like, back to the beginning, right? Like, we had so many reboots, you know, and there were some successful ones. Gosh, what comes to mind? Batman Begins, Casino Royale. I'm just spitballing, you know, Star Trek. I don't know. Did I get them all in? but there's this notion of like, well, we go back to the beginning, right? That's where the media story is. And I'm, you know, my knee jerk reaction to that is like, oh, I'm tired. Show me something new. Don't go back. Don't go. I don't want to see more stuff with, you know, the early days. And of course, you know, Andor potentially suffers from that. It's a prequel to Rogue One in a sense, right? It's set in a time period we've already moved past and chronologically within the world of Star Wars. But the difference is, if you're doing a prequel, if you're going back just to show us what we've already seen, it's not fun or exciting. And that's like the bad version. And what's so nice about this show is so much of what we're seeing is brand new. I mean, other than Cassian Andor and Mon Mothma, am I being really stupid? Is there any? I mean,
we
guys
see
mentioned,
Saw, but like very
oh, Saw Gerrera.
Yeah. Hey, how about Melshi, guys? Let's not forget about Melshi. Is it, no one knows who Melshi is.
I don't know.
Melshi. No, I mean, of course. I'm on a Star Wars podcast. I know who Melshi.
Ladies and gentlemen, Melshi, come on out, Melshi, come on out.
No. So Melshi, who's in the prison?
Is
a primary rebel in Rogue One.
Yes.
Which
at the end of the episode, they're running together.
They're running together at the end of the episode. But like, he has a nice role within Rogue One, and it's the same actor. And I'm actually really kind of excited to watch Rogue One again now, caring more about Melshi. He doesn't make it through Rogue One.
That's why they keep showing that guy though in the prison so much.
Because he's right he becomes
because he's Melshi.
Yeah, he's Melshi. Come on. Melshi is one of the iconic Star Wars characters.
Melshi.
Claude.
Where are the Melshis? Where are the munchies?
But I do, I want to go back to,
many
this is
Melshis
what we've talked
died
about.
To get you this information.
It's true. Many did. But this is, again, recontextualizing earlier episodes. Like, why have we spent so much time with her and her daughter and her family? Like, why have we seen so much of that? Well, it matters now in this moment because she, and this end of this episode is a lot about sacrifice. She's sacrificed a lot in her personal life to be able to have the position she has, to be able to impact positively for the galaxy, for her planet, and in the rebellion, but she's sacrificed some things with her daughter. And is she, based on what you said, that last line, like Davos says, that's the only thing untrue that you've said, is she willing to sacrifice her daughter for the rebellion? In sacrifice her, not obviously kill her, but marry her off. In a way that it would be obviously devastating for her.
Yeah, but her daughter kind of sucks. So like,
I think
her daughter does suck. But yeah,
I think they're gonna do it.
I think she should try to marry off her husband.
Oh my God, that
kind of sucks too.
That's like all of the actors. I mean, he doesn't. There's not much asked of him, right? But just the casting,
just
like that guy exudes you're just like at the party with them and you're just like leaning over to your buddy being like, why is she with him?
You know what I realized?
Ditch the zero. Get with the hero, you know?
Like, you know what I realized about that character?
Luthen's looking for heroes.
About that character that like his design, like his wardrobe. And I talked about this on our text chain. So I know that, you know, this is tangential, but what I thought was interesting. What's that?
Supplemental material for the Patreon.
Yeah. Indulge me. His wardrobe is baffling, right? At first, he has kind of this like kimono look with like a little bit of the like ponytail. You know, it's very like
it's almost a top knot and the OB.
And I was thinking
stuff,
about it, and I was like, he grew up in a time like they live through the transition out out of the time of the Jedi, right? Like the overthrow of the Senate happened in their lifetime. They're in the midst of it, essentially, or in the aftermath of it. And it's like, this dude, like, he probably grew up being like, Jedi are cool. And so he's this like rich dude who dresses how he thinks a Jedi would dress in this like very lame way.
Yes.
Where it's like, like he's like this rich guy that's just like, yeah, like, yeah, you know who's cool? Like Jedi. And so like,
he's
just kind of
got Qui-Gon's
like
hair. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, and it's just like, so, it makes him so much lamer that he's like such
pathetic,
like a like poser kind of dude who like also, you know, the Jedi were extinguished. And he seems like so oblivious to that. I just think it's such an interesting character aspect.
Ryan, what's actually just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying. So in world, he's sort of culturally appropriating Jedi attire, which I mean, you can go back to the Jedi attire as designed by George Lucas and conceived and stuff. But it's also like culturally appropriative in our world of like having a white guy wear what is seemingly very like Asian influenced, designs, and almost like a costume. And it's like, it plays both like in world and in our world. And that kind of like, that kind of reflexiveness is why we can like so immediately latch on to like, oh, look at this drip. At this, you know,
he's like a dude, he reminds me of like a dude who like wears black turtlenecks because they're obsessed with Steve Jobs.
He's like a straight up, it's just like 80s movie villain.
Yeah, Ryan, I wore that one time, okay?
Once. And you know what? Halloween. You have the neck for it, my man. You pulled it off.
You did it. It was Halloween.
No, I'm really self-conscious about my neck now, thanks.
No, I'm saying you're a turtleneck man. That's a real thing. You got a nice long neck. I mean, I don't, it's weird to say in front of all these people, but
Lights up. Let's take a look at Mike. Let's turn the lights on the stage.
Slender neck, that's great for turtlenecks.
We're getting a lot of thumbs up in silence. It's making me feel better. Thanks,
that's good.
Everybody. Yeah, there you go.
Nap. One little tidbit, because we've talked about how there haven't been cameos. There's been minor Easter eggs. We see Luthen in his antiquity shop, and he's polishing what was Queen Amidala's headdress. Very brief moment of showing that, which is kind of cool.
Wow. Ooh, I missed it.
Dark. Dark.
Yeah, that's essentially just like the Lucasfilm prop house.
Yeah, they're just cutting corners where they can.
They're just throwing things in there.
I think there was an Indiana Jones.
We talked about that.
Prop,
Shankara stones.
I mean,
it was the fedora, and I thought it took me out of it.
I'm sure you're about to like get into Luthen, but like I just love the characterization of like this antiquities dealer who's like so much more than he seems, and the idea that like he actually is kind of like a historian and art lover. Like his character seems like also born out of like it's not entirely a fiction. Obviously, like there is a performative aspect, we see him preparing, but like there's also an element that it's like I'm so curious. I mean, we learn what was the everything that he gave up, like what was included in that, and I love the idea that it's like it often is like it is the, I mean, maybe this is just an artist's view and a writer's view, but it's like it is often like, you know, the artists and the historians who, you know, care the most and speak up and fight back whenever things slide towards oppression.
I love that. He's kind of this. He knows the history. It's in him. He understands what's at stake potentially.
Well, let's talk about Luthen in his end, because I almost feel like that's the end of the episode, but we can really should close this on what happens at the end of Narcan 5 and where they're at. Luthen says before he makes his way to find Lonnie is that she's, you know, his assistant is saying, hey, this is probably a trap. And he's like, if this is a trap, we've already lost. And it's very clear. Like if
what is his assistant's name, by the way? Is it Leia?
It's Clea.
I think it's
Clea. It's Clea.
Okay, sorry.
It does seem like it's Leia, right? It's too close to Leia. That's bad writing.
There's some rumors that Clea is actually Leia, and I'm like, if this show were to do that, I'd be so disappointed.
Interesting.
No.
But anyway,
it would be a terrible pseudonym for her.
would be really
very undercover.
No, not at all.
Leia would not be. This isn't what she's doing right now.
Right?
That
would be
time.
Terrible.
Hey, meet your brother, Bluke. All right,
It's Luca.
Luca.
Well, they just hide him with the same last name as the villain of the entire story. But We get Lonnie, who I basically thought he was just a great face in the crowd within the ISB, but no, he has a really nice scene here going back and forth with Luthen. And we get to this monologue, which you know is Tony Gilroy, but it's also Bo Willimon, who did House of Cards, who's done a lot of stage writing.
Yeah, and a playwright, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, he wrote the Ides of March. Well, it was the original. The play was called Farragut North, but yeah.
Yeah, and then I like that movie a lot as well.
Me too, a lot, yeah.
It's so good.
But then we get this monologue from Luthen, which has, I think, its place within one of the great scenes in Star Wars, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm going to wax poetic on this. I guess I shouldn't have said anything before, and I'm going
wax
deep.
Wax it, Mike.
I think this is a masterpiece of a television episode, and I think that it deserves... I mean, if you're not submitting this episode as the Emmy consideration episode, then what are you doing, Disney? But I think that, I mean, I'll go over and I've watched that speech once just because I want to cherish it again when I watch it again. Like, the more times you watch it, it's still great, but you obviously won't have the same feelings as the first time you watch it. But just like little elements in it where it's like, I share my dreams with Ghost. I fight for a sunrise I'll never see. Like, all these things that in a lesser show with a lesser actor, even if you had that great writing, could have just kind of come off as cheesy, is beautiful and
that's
wonderful.
The thing. Stellan Skarsgård is perfect for delivering a monologue like that.
Yeah.
Just like,
well, there's two monologues given to two actors who completely crush them in this episode. And this is one of them. And this, this one hit harder for me personally. Yeah. I mean, they're both magnificent. I'm not trying to take away from anything we'll discuss in a moment, but like, for me, this was the bit that resonated, because I do think, Luthen has been a bit more of an enigma. There's more to his past that I want to know. And it is kind of interesting. We are seeing, really, the most exciting thing about Luthen to me, in the character in the show, is like, it's like he's the architect of the rebellion that we grew up loving. Like, he's we see the end results, but like, this is the guy who saw the potential, who's like, he's kind of the one playing, you know, the four story, whatever you call it, four way chess, like, you know, looking three dimensional, four dimensional chess, going like, it's the Doctor Strange moment. There's one path through like all the million ways we could go, and I need to align people and make it work. And it's like, I just find, and his speech of, I don't know if it would motivate me if I were in that guy's position in the elevator.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not trying to motivate him. He's trying to make him aware of the situation he's in.
Yeah, he's kind of like, oh, no, you...
I guess you're right. He's saying,
it's kind of a consistent theme throughout the show where it's like, there is... You're either in it or you're not, and there is no like turning back. So the guy's like, I'm done, and then he's just like, well, no, you're not. You're already in it.
Like, yeah, he's kind of just saying like, if you're looking for some sense of fairness, there is none, and like, I'm here to tell you that like, you don't have a choice in this. And it's not even like, him being like, listen, I'm sorry, buddy. It's like him being like, you're a pawn that I'm using, and like, that's the situation you're in.
Right, it's just so prison. Like, everyone's in prisons on different levels.
When he's like, I told you, I think of you daily. It's like, it's both like cutting and touching. Like, it's...
Well, it's also, it's true. It's true because he needs him so much.
Right, like but it's kind of funny because, you know, it adds a touch of humor where it's like, he does mean it. It is true. It's kind of like a little bit of like an ego slap to the guy. And it's also like... comically like touching it. I love that.
Sam, you talked about trying to put yourself in the position of this guy. I mean, you have a young daughter, and I've been asking you to spy on Republicans for a long time.
Everybody else seems afraid to laugh. It's fine.
And thank you for that, Sam. It really worked this last week.
It was a great sacrifice. For
I think
that you put out
so.
There.
So obviously, there are two great monologues in this episode. I think that this one hits harder because while Andy Serkis does a great job with his, that is the kind of monologue we've heard before in things. You know, just and like that. That's no discredit to it, and it's like one of the better versions of it. But even in Star Wars, we've seen, you know, like the kind of like, the time is now. There's no day but today. Like, you know, like that kind of thing. So I think that this felt a little more unique, even though there have been monologues like this. But this idea of the sacrifice of the people who started the rebellion within Star Wars, that it's just like they knew that they were, they were executing, they were making sacrifices for benefits that would not happen in their lifetime.
Yep.
Which obviously is, you know, a prescient thing through all generations and all like struggles throughout time in real life, you know, like, right. Like a good example now would be like the climate crisis is like people that don't want to take.
Yeah.
There are people who are like, we need to take steps because even if we don't see the benefits, like we need to set up the world to be survivable for future generations. And other people that are like, if it's not going to affect me, like, why would I care?
Yeah.
You know, and like that dichotomy. So it was just interesting for that to be so explicitly voiced in this universe.
Yeah. And I think we'll be used by people going forward in things outside of the show. It'll certainly have an impact for people who think that way, who feel that way about the way they approach, you know, supporting things in their lives.
Optimistic, yeah. But yes.
I was saying those who already support that side of it. I'm not saying it's not going to convince anybody who's on the opposite side of it.
Hey, maybe it will. Who knows?
Maybe it will.
There you go.
I do want to go back to production design again. Yep. Luke Hall, like I love this hallway, this open hallway
very
with no
cool.
Very Star Wars, but also
no
because
railings.
The elevator was everything of that was real.
Yeah.
And it just made that all fit.
And you know, also like a real neat geography journey from the pristine, sunny upper worlds to the underworld of Star Wars. I thought that's just a very
though he was clearly in front of a volume.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Fine. No, that was a good use. That was a good use.
The volume grain stepped in. Yeah. It was. Yeah. A little windy. Yeah. A little dangerous.
I do want to say one thing. I have a bit of a bone to pick with the Star Wars and Disney marketing team. Luthen says, "I'll take all the heroes I can get." And the current Disney Plus ad for like the package, if you buy all of ESPN Plus, Hulu, and Disney Plus, is Luthen going, "I'll take all the heroes I can get," and then it cuts to Kim Kardashian. I'm just like, really? Like, come on. After that speech, no. Why did you use that?
So you're saying you don't think she's a hero?
You know, in some aspects.
You better hope she's not here tonight.
Wow, Mike.
Come on out. Come on out.
Kim.
That was the special guest we had the entire time.
Kim K.
Turn the lights up on stage, please. We've had the lights off on the stage the whole time, by the way.
This is so awkward.
Never doing my own lights.
All right, well, let's get to the Kino speech and the way that this episode ends from Narquina 5. I loved when they went into like the control room and it just kind of felt like the most mousy type guys who's doing the big voice.
And just in a little reminiscent of the prison scene in A New Hope. I think I got a little bit of that energy there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Yeah, and I, you know, a lot of this we've already talked about what Andy Serkis is doing here. He's laying it out for all of them, and he really, again, he repeats what Cassian says to him. You know, I'd rather die trying to escape than give them what they want, and he keeps repeating the one way out for them to get out, which I'm embarrassed in the last episode. I forgot the name of the title of the episode. Should have been pretty easy. But they find everyone then does start on all the different levels to make their way out. We have the nice moment of all the guards basically hiding. We don't really have any kind of standoff. They all immediately cower and hide in a room because they know that they can't take on this group of 5,000 plus men who are fighting their way out of this.
I did love that they didn't even make a moment of that. You know, like they made a moment of it in the show, but what I mean is like I'm glad they didn't have a moment where it's like they overpowered the guards or like there was a fight.
I was waiting for just a hallway battle.
No, thank God that they just like just showed the utter cowardice of like the cogs in the Imperial machine. And just like prison guards in general, cowards.
Yeah. Which the one who first introduces them to Narquina 5, who kind of has that crazy voice and it's like he seems so evil from the start. I really wanted to see him be taken down, but he's the one cowering at the front of the door. So, I mean, that's fine, but I just kind of really wanted to see that guy get it at some point.
Also, how gratifying when Andor like shouts at those two guys to be on program in the control room. It's that was more rewarding than any other like clapback or comeback or, you know, beatdown that they could have shown.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
And then as you talked about, I think what was set up in this episode, we've said it's not just that they escape. It's not just that they're in prison. It's that we have a moment like what we get from Kino at the end of this. And done everything they could. And you think back now, knowing what happens at the end, he knew all along. He knew all along that there was no actual escape for him if they were able to do this because he couldn't swim.
Do you think one of the most? I don't know.
I actually thought that he maybe believed or hoped or had allowed himself to hope that there would be a transport that he could get to or something, fair. which is what I kind of thought. Yep. But if you think about that, it's like, well, what's the end game here? They're suddenly on a transport that surely could be tracked or followed or whatever. Right. So it's just that moment and the way it plays with Andor just, not being able to hear him and him sort of like him giving him a very, I mean, for me, it resonated as a very like paternal fatherly look of like, it's okay that you can't hear me. You need to go. Mm-hmm. And like his kind of resignation to like, knowing like as Andor gets, because Andor gets knocked off by the mad rush of the crowd. And he's kind of like, well, we didn't get our goodbye and that's okay. This was enough. We had our moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's just one of the most like devastating, but also just kind of like sincere, inspiring lines of all of Star Wars is when he's like, I can't swim. And it was kind of like, well, he did everything he can. And that was kind of Andor's point, was that you have to do what you can here in this situation. And you did everything. And if that's where his journey stops, that's where his journey stops. But he knows that he did it. Like he fulfilled his whatever. And who knows what happens to him.
Also, thematically, it's exactly what Stellan Skarsgård's character is talking about. He put in the work to make a better life for people that he would not experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, it's like it's a selflessness. And
Ryan, do you think the writers intended that? It's so refreshing. We say it every episode. It's getting like we're a broken record, but how refreshing is it to like, it's the fact that like you can tell there's more than one pass at the damn scripts for these episodes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like even the best, even my favorite episodes of like the Star Wars TV that's come before kind of feel like a first pass. Like somebody's like, I got this idea, I'm going to write it. And they go, dang, that was a good idea. Print, you know, as opposed to like, this just feels like there was at every corner, you know, one of my favorite things, and I actually use this, I use this in work. I use this in like the personal like art that I make, like the, you know, my time in the theater, one of the theaters I worked at, like every single piece of work that anyone did, whether it was on stage or in the production or if it was in the administrative side where I worked, it was like everybody would always ask, like, well, is there a way to make, can we make that stronger? Is there a way to like, is there a way to say that better? Is there a way to make that stronger? It was like the way they phrased it. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like you get something like Andor when people are asking those questions and unafraid to say, like, is there a way to make this stronger? Is there a way to tighten this up? Is there a way, can we cut one thing more or add one more line that's going to resonate? And like, I don't know, Ryan, like, I didn't quite put it together, but I know I felt the resonance of that, like being a parallel, right? Like I didn't have it in the moment. It just ruled.
Also, I can admit when I'm wrong, and here I go. We went after Tony Gilroy after that very annoying Brian Koppelman podcast that he did, where he was talking about how Rogue One was in such trouble.
Oh,
blah,
my
blah,
God.
Blah, 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 blah.
The worst.
I still think that was like a not classy move to talk about like another filmmaker, namely Gareth Edwards. With that, and that's why it wasn't classy. But he talked about how he was like proud that Rogue One didn't feel like a Star Wars movie, which at the time felt like annoying. But here's the thing, is that all of the other Star Wars shows have been like, even the ones that we like a lot, the live action ones, really sycophantic. And Tony Gilroy seems pretty uninterested in Star Wars as an entity, which someone could count against him. But the thing of it is that when he's crafting the story, he doesn't seem to think that it being Star Wars is enough, let's show someone who they know. Oh, it's Star Wars. It feels cool. We'll show an X-Wing or we'll show a Stormtrooper, blah, 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 blah. And like, oh, Star Wars is so great that that'll be enough. You know, like it'll be so cool. Like we'll see Watto again or like whatever it is, you know? And
second time you've referenced Watto.
Yeah. So because of that, because he doesn't seem to care about Star Wars as much as other people making Star Wars. He cares that it's a good story and like is putting in the work of being like, it needs to be more than just references.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which a lot of the live action ones, even the ones I really like, seem to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just show someone that they know and they'll get really excited or we're going to show, and I'll get excited.
We'll show a form of a trench run and you're going to be excited because you've got, oh, stormtroopers are on speeder bikes again. Like, you know, you're just going to see these things that you know and love. And it's like, great, we get to see this again.
Yeah. And it seems like if someone was like, hey, Tony, can we make this character Dryden Voss? He'd be like, who the hell is that?
Yeah, I think he would. I absolutely agree.
So in a strange way, it's kind of like really working for this because I think that we need people to kind of push it and not be so obsessed with the past. Which obviously Ryan Johnson with The Last Jedi loved Star Wars, but he was notably not obsessed with the past because like that's what that movie is kind of about.
Yeah, and I think this to me is, we talked about it earlier in the season, we're back into the world of what we felt like during The Last Jedi, when it felt like Star Wars had all these other possibilities to tell stories. And I think that's what Andor is doing as well. Like this is the best IP storytelling of the last 5 years ever since Last Jedi. I think Endgame is wonderful, but like this to me is better storytelling.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah, it's a different beast too. Like Endgame was the culmination. But I can't say definitively, but it's certainly up there.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna quickly say goodbye to Chris and Sam. I think we're gonna wrap up this episode as it is very quickly. But Sam, Chris, this is always a pleasure, and we get to continue to keep talking about it because there's 12 episodes. It's so great.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for being here at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yes, thank you all. Thank you all for this. This is episode 10, though. Now I'm getting on the like the sad like summer's almost over.
Yeah,
no, that's the thing. Well, I mean,
they're going to be bangers. They're going to be so good.
But the best thing though is you really have to look forward to is spring of 2023. Watto, the return, a Star Wars story.
There you go, Watto, a Star Wars solo story.
Well, that is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We'll be back shortly, very soon, with another episode about episode 11 of Andor. Thank you for joining us. If you're here at the Hollywood Bowl, make sure to check your keys. Don't leave them behind. And Kim Kardashian,
your servers.
If you're still out there, I apologize. Good night, everyone.
Annie?
Hold the applause. Hold the applause for the recording, please. Yep, we'll do it off mic. Thank you all. Okay.
We'll just release the pause as a Patreon content.
Okay, Ryan, you're going to cut in the applause there.
Do you think they know?